Welcome to the IGIS Institute Sounds of Safety podcast, where our community will be delving into a series of critical issues supporting the public sector mission space. In this episode, we continue our series exploring how AI is reshaping the cybersecurity landscape, this time with a focus on practical defense. Join Larry Zorio and Jeremy Cooper-Levitt from the IGIS Cybersecurity Working Group once again as they dive into how AI can both empower defenders and fuel cyber criminals. They'll share strategies for countering modern threat actors, leveraging AI tools responsibly, and staying ahead of the technology curve in a world where attacks are becoming increasingly sophisticated.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of IGIS's Sound of Safety podcast. This is the Cybersecurity Corner. This is Larry, once again, here with Jeremy. And today's episode is called Intelligent Defenders, How AI is Transforming Cybersecurity. This is a group of podcasts that we've been doing around AI, specifically around cybersecurity. And today we promised you, the audience, that we were going to talk about how you can use AI to protect yourself against cybersecurity incidents, threats, risks, and so forth. And Jeremy, let's just get right into it and kind of introduce like what we're going to be focusing on a bit here. Like, what are some of the things that you want to get across in this episode to the audience, almost as a teaser to give them an agenda here?
Well, the stakes are rising, right? Like with the different attacks that are out there, they're faster. Sometimes it feels like we're going into a fight, we're outmatched. We don't have the right defense or weapons. We're going into a situation that the other person, they're heavily outmatching us. And so I feel like artificial intelligence, along with machine learning and its response time and decision-making, helps even the playing field. It helps even the playing field from a lack of talent in cybersecurity. And it requires a lot of things with the growth that we're seeing in the attacks, especially with malware. We've got to get better at responding. In our field, there's always jobs that are going unfilled. Mm-hmm. Now, artificial intelligence can help fill some of those positions and help the people who are in the field doing the cybersecurity work for them to be faster and better and stronger. It's almost, I always call it, it's like adding a bionic suit to the existing cybersecurity team.
Yeah, I love the fact that very early on you touched on the gap that a lot of the audience is facing when it comes to cybersecurity talent and resources. So anybody who's listening today who is trying to fill different positions, having a difficult time with interviews, finding the right resources, being able to afford these resources, some of these AI examples, these tools, this technology that we're going to talk about today can help you with that. You might be able to fill the gap. You might be able to save some money on budget, or to Jeremy's point, at least with the small team that you have, maybe you can get 1x or 2x the efficiency out of what they're doing today, because we're always playing catch up in the cybersecurity space. The attackers are always ahead of us. So we have to start modernizing wherever we can and really, you know, just doubling down on that. You know, ransomware is rampant. Phishing is getting better and better and better with AI. So this sophistication, we have to keep up with it. All right, so that's good. Hopefully that level sets for everybody. Let's start. I do want to kind of focus a bit on just some of the other challenges that our audience is really up against, Jeremy. So we did focus on the fact that maybe their budgets are small. Resources might be lacking. But what are some other ones? Some other ones that come to mind, and maybe you can just elaborate more. I'm thinking like the infrastructure, the technologies that they're using are older, and that could be something. There's also a bit of focus kind of on public safety around the fact that they are using older systems. So attackers want to go after those markets a bit more because of the lack of protections. But what are some other things that people should be thinking about on how AI might be able to help?
I think one of the really good areas for artificial intelligence, if you don't have a threat intelligence team that's out there looking on your behalf for what are the attacks that will happen because of everybody has it. It's not just in the public sector. Everybody has end-of-life systems. They try to squeeze the last ounce of life out of a Unix system or out of a Windows system. They want to try and keep things moving because stuff works and they don't want to break it or upgrade it. Well, there are threat intelligence capabilities out there now with artificial intelligence embedded into it that if you're out there and you feed into your intelligence system, here's the inventory I have. Here's the systems that I have. What am I susceptible to? What are the top attacks that could get me? And what should I do to protect against it? These threat intelligence systems now can do that. And if you hook them up, if you're lucky enough to have an endpoint detection and kind of a response system, it can take action for you when patterns occur. But the key is, we always have talked about this in the past, know your assets. What's your most important data? Use threat intelligence and imbue it with artificial intelligence, and it'll go out there and scour the dark web to see what attacks are out there. And if anyone's mentioning you in an attack, it'll scour the social media sites as well.
That's great.
And it does that today. It becomes a team member, giving you your daily briefing and telling you what to go and look for.
So I love the fact that you're actually focusing on proactiveness, which is great, right? I think when most people think about using AI to stop attacks or to prevent attacks from happening, they're more thinking of something just happened. I'm going to use a tool that's now going to stop it. But what you're saying, which is great, is how do you use these technologies to be proactive and go hunt for holes on your network, holes in your laptops, like just vulnerabilities that you have? And it can do it a lot more efficiently. You had mentioned, you know, if you have the luxury of endpoints and things like that, endpoint protections. One of the great features that we're seeing with some of these AI technologies is you can feed your endpoint protection. So, you know, the big ones, CrowdStrike, SentinelOne, Microsoft Defender, like those are kind of the big ones. Like, audience, if you're using a malware antivirus software, like one of those or others, you can actually feed those logs into an AI tool. Then you have your firewalls, right? I'm sure all of you are using some form of a firewall. You can take those logs. You can upload those into one of these AI tools. And it starts to build a picture in this tool of where your gaps are and where your holes are and where you need to focus. So you can prevent attacks before they even happen, which is what Jeremy's getting to, is being proactive. So that's great. I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was more focused on something did happen. What are you going to do now? But you certainly want to get proactive as possible. Any other proactive things that are coming rattling around in your head?
Yes. One of the big things I'm looking at, and one of my biggest tenets of cybersecurity I've always talked about, is attack yourself. Mm-hmm. There are now companies out there that have AI embedded pen testing platforms that you can use that are smart enough to go out and pen test for you and know when to stop and know when it's dangerous. I wouldn't let them run amok completely in your environment, but for the price of what it would cost you for a very experienced pen tester, you can go and get these types of sites that'll go out there. You give it the assets, you give it the IP address ranges, you tell it the different types of attacks, like see if your website's prone to SQL injection. It'll go through and step by step go and perform the testing. It'll go out and look at what are the different attacks that could be used against you. It'll use things like Burp Suite to try and take advantage of it and give you a report, an official report that your auditors could even look at, like a PCI auditor, and say, yeah, I had a pen tester. My pen testing platform went and looked at it, and it used artificial intelligence to do it. And you can even test yourself to see how responsive your detection is, your endpoint detection, your malware detection is. So the way that it works is it's all virtual, and it'll go and plant some pretend malware out there and see how your system's picked it up. But for the price, let's say, of $150K, which you might be paying for a top-end pen tester, you can go out there and run this all throughout your entire environment and have it going and bring you back reports.
Jeremy, so you're using these technologies, and I'm sure there are other ones out there, but from what you've seen, so the point you're making, like, I'm trying to understand like how cost effective something like this would be, right? So let's say it's $150,000 a year, and that would basically most of the time just get you like one pen test per year if you were to hire somebody. If you're using a technology like this, can you run it like once a month?
What did you want? You pick your number of licenses, your IP address range, and the assets that you want to run them on. Mm-hmm. Now you don't have to pay external third party, 30K a pop, 50K a pop. You're doing this every other week on your most important websites, mm-hmm. especially like we said before, the ones that are end of life that you couldn't patch right now or you can't upgrade yet. So go pen test the attacks that you're susceptible to, and then you can go and tell the AI, go test it. See if this is real. See if they can get in.
So some of our audience might be used to just that one time pen test and they're used to it. And they might be thinking like, why should I be doing it more regularly, Jeremy? You know, if you are thinking that, audience, things change every single second, right? Not only on your network, every time you make a change on the firewall, every time you make an update to one of your systems, if you install a new software package, if you update a printer, if somebody rogue who you don't know plugged something into the Ethernet port in the wall, like every one of those is a change that could open up a hole in your environment. So there's a lot of bang for your dollar when it comes to a technology like this, which is Jeremy's talking about, because, you know, a lot of us, again, just think of doing a pen test once a year. I can just afford this budget once a year to have a pen tester come in. But now you can do it a lot more frequently. So that's a great one. Jeremy, the other one that I was thinking about too is, even we talk a lot about frameworks and compliance, and I know our audience has to worry a lot about different compliance frameworks. There's a lot of AI that is out there to kind of help you with that as well. It can go and grab evidence for you. It can go grab your risk ratings and all that. And this isn't necessarily the most sexy part of cybersecurity. You know, it's not like the hacker with a hoodie on. But again, this is a bit proactive, right? If you have a mature program in place, then you're going to be a lot more ready if you are attacked or you're hacked. So, you know, using technologies like that could also help. I don't know if you've had any experience using those or if you've explored that at all on the compliance side.
Yes, we're doing that actively right now. Every vendor I've been looking at in the last 18 months have been asking for AI functionality. And what I really like about what you said is the act of going through audits, audit fatigue is real. So if you can have an AI system that's out there and you trained it, what's the evidence you need to pass these audits? Your auditors can go and look at that. So your team can spend time doing the stuff they need to be doing, like protecting, patching, going and doing threat intelligence, looking at those briefings that the AI is running for you in other areas. So it's, you got this AI workshop, if you will, or AI factory that's running all these different parts of your security environment, and you're babysitting it, you're monitoring it, you're making sure the results are what you would expect them to be. And it's freeing up time for you to really dig and threat hunt. But I think audits take a lot of time. They take a lot of time. I do think there's value in them and value in following frameworks. You're always going to have to get audited. But we can't think of a better way to use AI than to help you prepare and gather information for the audit.
Yeah, it's funny because it is such an obvious use case. It really is. And I don't think that it gets necessarily the publicity that it should with these technologies. Because ultimately, I mean, that's what we should first be looking at when it comes to AI is, what are these mundane tasks? Jeremy, I love how you call it audit fatigue. The last thing you want is your team or even yourself, listener, to get fatigued having to deal with these audits. And then, you know, you're a little lax, you're not paying attention, you're not putting your time and effort into patching and vulnerability management and what have you, all these different examples. So it is really, really the obvious one that everyone should try to definitely go after. Some other ones that come to mind that I would love to dive a bit deeper in, and these are probably more of the ones, this is great because this is a free flowing episode, but the ones I was thinking about before we jumped on were definitely the ones that I think the audience might have been thinking about too, is there's phishing detection, right? I talked about how phishing attacks are getting a lot more sophisticated now. Well, on the reverse, there's phishing detection that is becoming a lot more advanced now to be able to spot those. So that's one. And there's some anomaly detection, some endpoint protections. Do you want to just choose one of those and elaborate on it, Jeremy?
We just recently put in a tool called Abnormal for phishing, and it has AI built right into it. So it has changed the way emails come into our company. It is chunking away at all our emails, finding malware, and it's taking stuff out of commission before it even reaches the inbox where you don't want it to take. And the time that our SOC analysts were spending digging into all those email threats, because it's still the top attack vector is email, it's still the leading one.
Yeah.
But it's saving so much time. We've estimated in time it's saving a day a week in man hours.
Wow.
Literally just going and chunking away at email. So think about how that could help your current team.
Mm-hmm.
And take out the biggest attack vector. Exchange servers are full of poison. Emails have malware in them. They're everywhere. If you've got something blocking it before it can even get to the inbox, and not just blocking it, but analyzing it for you and taking it out of commission, that is doing it at a higher efficiency rate and a higher rate of excellence than a human could do it.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I've heard lots of great things around just email, a lot of the phishing tools that are out there now. So it sounds like you found a good one, a lot of other great ones as well. So really, I think the point of this is look into it. Hopefully you have something available. If you don't, you know, to Jeremy's point that he made, if you don't, and maybe you even don't have the budget, you might be able to make a really good ROI case to get that tool. If this tool is going to save you one day a week, well, maybe you can justify the budget and you can go to your superiors or leadership and find some dollars to afford a tool like that. The one that I wanted to touch on is kind of this anomaly detection, which I mentioned earlier, but another way to call it is kind of behavior analytics. Basically, what AI is going to do is it's going to really figure out a baseline of the behaviors of your users. Not only users, but devices that are on your network, systems that are on your network. And it's just going to watch them for, I don't know, let's say 30 days. And it's going to get a baseline of how all these different users, devices, systems act. And then some of these new AI tools are actually going to identify anomalies. They're going to figure out what's changed with the behavior of some of these. And they're going to alert you. They're going to alert you, hey, you might want to go look at this or that. This risk is a bit higher on this particular asset than it was yesterday. And that's really kind of where the value comes. An example I'll give is you have a police officer who typically logs in 9 to 5, downloads a gig of data a day, and now they're logging in at 2 a.m. They're downloading 20 gigs of data a day, and that is where some of these tools can start calling that out for you, notifying you that there are some anomalies, some things going on. And these have existed in a way before even these buzzwords of AI, you know, especially the past, let's call it 2 years, but they're getting even better now. They really are, because they're able to handle a lot more information. They're able to kind of quote unquote think on their own and kind of go down the rabbit hole a little bit with an investigation, really come back with some really rich data for you. So that's the one that's coming to mind. Any other ones that are coming to mind for you, Jeremy?
I do want to say I agree with you that user behavior analysis tools have been around for a while. And that what we're seeing now is the communication back to a regular user. And that's where the large language modules come in. So then now they can come back and say, I found this happened. This is what normally happens. And here's all the evidence to support why I think this is a bad thing that's happening.
It's like your own detective, Jeremy, right? That's coming back to you in plain English. This is what I found.
Yeah. And you can talk back to it and it'll understand you. You can ask it the questions like, is this the only time that this has happened where they've come in at 2 a.m.? Maybe they are working off shift. Maybe they're assigned to a different case. Can we check on, did they log into the door? And you can talk back and forth, interact with the AI. That's the difference that's been there in the past, is the way we are talking and communicating as humans with the artificial intelligence. But we are letting them now make more and more decisions for us. So with the endpoint detection, it will go and lock down a system and quarantine it, not let that user do anything until a human comes over and looks at it and decides, oh, we're good with that. But it's now you're kind of letting the guardrails off and letting it run in your environment. But you can now talk to it.
I was hoping you were going to go there. I want to elaborate on just kind of what Jeremy just described. So another buzzword or term that's used kind of in the cybersecurity industry on what he just described is security orchestration and automation response, which is SOAR. So that is, so you had this detective that found some anomalies, and maybe you set up some threshold that if this quote unquote AI detective finds a certain amount of anomalies and the risk score goes above, I don't know, 50 out of 100, it's then going to take an action. And the action could be that their account's disabled, could be that you're going to kick that device off of the network until this person talks to an IT person or a security person or whoever's in charge. But it can do a lot. It can quarantine. You know, Jeremy mentioned kind of some of the examples. But really, you can build like a playbook of what you want to do. And, you know, some of these are so great too that it can even help you with the playbook and give you suggestions like, hey, if this happens, it recommends you do X, Y, and Z. But that is a term that you may have heard before called SOAR, but really AI is really kind of taking SOAR to the next level, because that's another one that has been around for a while, but now it's just so much easier and so much more approachable and so much more intelligent than it used to be. All right, so we got that. Yeah, the other one too is, which you touched on it at the beginning, and I do want to go a little bit deeper, Jeremy, on, I think at the beginning of this episode, you mentioned something around just like intel, like gathering intel. You know, you can go have it search the dark web for you and stuff like that. So with what Jeremy's describing too, this is not like a very complicated thing to do, everybody. Like if you have even like a ChatGPT license. Now, I think you probably do need the paid version. I don't know if you can do this with the free version. If you can, it's probably limited. But you can just set up GPT to go and research and look for things for you. Look for intel. Now, I have not tried it actually looking like on the dark web, which Jeremy's example was. And maybe you have, Jeremy. But you can at least have it go and do a search on vulnerabilities that were released, breaches that just happened in the past week, especially public safety. Give me public safety breaches. It's going to give you a list of the breaches, and then you could ask it, give me a theme of the breach. Is there any malware that's kind of the similar in all these different attacks or breaches or what have you? So that is something that you can do. Like, I want to make it clear that everything we're talking about today, yes, some of them are expensive. Like we mentioned, you know, the $150,000 pen testing tool, but I think, you know, it depends on the size. It might be cheaper for you, you know, these email security tools, but some of this stuff you can do on your own. And it's not very difficult. Jeremy, have you set up any of those on your own, like kind of intel searches through GPTs and what have you?
Yeah, we are doing exactly what you're saying. We're using a kind of a smaller startup company we wanted to partner with. And we're pulling in all of our data, all of our assets. We've prioritized them by our top 25 assets. And then we are pulling in all of our Splunk data. We're pulling in all of our log files, anything that it's connected to we could possibly think of. And then we're training the models to know what good looks like so it can start to predict what's going on. And so some of these smaller companies, you know, you got to do your due diligence on them, but they do it for you. They help set that up for you and get that working. And we have found really good success in that. And it integrates well with, you know, our SIM, which is Splunk, and our SOAR. It integrates very well with that. I'm seeing like the big companies get into this. So like Google Chronicle, they bought VirusTotal a couple of years ago, and Mandiant out of a company like that with the vast amounts of data they have at their disposal, they're able to start providing services for fractions of the cost that it used to be because they have large customer bases. Microsoft Defender and Sentinel, the same thing. They're able to help you out in those areas as well. So prices are coming down in these areas at a very quick rate. it's time to take advantage of it, because now the humans can talk to the computers and we don't need coders to do all the talking for us.
Love it. That's right. We can talk to the computers now. That's great. All right. I mean, we can't talk about AI with at least talking about some of the risks and maybe limitations there are with AI. I know some people are still nervous to use these technologies, and rightfully so. It's okay to be nervous. There are risks in everything. There are risks if I'm trying to cross the street today, right? Like, you know, as soon as you step over the curb. What are some kind of risks that people need to be aware of, Jeremy? Maybe limitations.
There's always the risk of, where's your data going? The machines need the data. They need to know your vulnerability data. They need to know your inventory. They need to know your assets. So if you're going to put this in a cloud situation, you better trust that cloud. You better do your due diligence, third-party risk management review on that. Now, when you found someone that you trust, what are the false positives that are going to start to come up? Mm-hmm. There could be examples like the one you brought up earlier of that detective that's coming in now at night. What if that detective, he had to come in at those times? Well, it's positive, and the AI blocked his computer and he couldn't work for 2 days. So that could be a false positive. But again, it goes back to, is the risk worth the reward? I believe it is. That's why there's something called training the models. That's why the humans will always have to be involved. They're going to have to look at the results of how the AI is learning and tell it, yes, that was a good decision that you made, or no, this was not correct. Here's why. And the AI will learn as you're teaching it what to look for in other instances as well. And it'll say, can you give me access to these systems so I won't make that mistake in the future? Mm-hmm. Smarter and smarter as they learn. But I still think you need to have the humans involved.
Yeah,
they should be involved. I think some of the top AI companies out there are saying, stay involved. This is something to make your humans superhumans, and they work better and they work smarter and they work faster. It wouldn't be smart to just turn the computers loose and let them run everything, because everybody would be locked out of their computer at some point.
Yeah, you touched on a lot of great things there. I can actually give an example. This happened to us. We had this great idea on how we wanted to use AI, and we went down the path. We started kind of running with it and starting to build the model. And then we realized that the data just wasn't ready yet, Jeremy. It just wasn't ready. So you have to be willing to stand down, stop that project, clean up the data, get it in a better position, or just find new data. That's going to be helpful, because it all comes down to the data. Because what we saw when we were testing it was coming back with a lot of false positives because we weren't giving it the right data source. So that is certainly the most important. I believe that's probably where most of people's frustrations come from, is because the data source is not the right data source. So that's definitely a risk. But I think if you plan it out, you plan it like a real project and you get in front of it and understand, like, is my data clean? Is it labeled correctly? Is it up to date? These are just some things that you should definitely be looking at. All right, let's start to move on to, like, what can an organization or a public safety agency do today just to get started? Like, what would be some tips you would have for them, Jeremy?
I always say this: start small and iterate to greatness. Dream big, but have small steps to get you there. Have a vision of where you want to get to, but start small. And I think companies, their best place, we talked about it already in this call, start with your email, because that's the top attack vector. That's where malware is getting in. That's where the human has the weakness. Start with looking at use cases with getting better detections on malware in your email and blocking it before it even gets into the inbox. That's what I would recommend. It's where we started. That's why we have a great, I mentioned the vendor's name already, but there's other ones like Proofpoint. Microsoft has it as well. If you're already in a Microsoft environment, which most of us listening are, go and talk to your sales rep and see what security controls that you can add for malware that has AI embedded into it. Turn it on and see if it works for you, and practice. A lot of these companies provide a proof of concept, or POV, proof of value, period of time. Let the results speak for itself. I would say start with email.
Yep. Mm-hmm. For all the security technologies, I agree. I would definitely start with email. I'm going to actually go a different direction. I'm not even going to recommend a technology. And I'm more going to say that if you want to get started, focus on the enablement side of it for your staff. What I mean by that is make sure you spend some time planning training around it. Because what I've found is when you focus on training and you focus on that enablement, the great thing about AI is honestly kind of, it's going to sound corny, but the possibilities are endless. And if you can train them on almost like the what if or the art of the possible a bit with this culture within your organization, I think it's going to go a long way. So with that, you know, definitely becomes some policies and procedures that you want to train them on. Kind of, these are the data types we're going to use at our organization to start. You know, in Jeremy's case, all right, we're going to start with just our email. It's going to be our email data. That's the only one we're focusing on for now. If you have other great ideas, that's wonderful. But we're going to focus on email for the first couple months. We're going to do this one first and really kind of setting that stage, because then it's going to get people focused. If you tell your organization we're only focusing on email, then it's going to get people focused on just that email and what we can do with it. We could go buy this tool. It could help us identify different cybersecurity risks. We might be able to do something else with it. Maybe there's some user behavior analytics stuff you could do with the email. And really, I think that's what you should do, is just kind of focus your efforts, make a plan. So that's what I would say. And I think you foster this kind of culture of a bit of innovation. And then you kind of slowly give them access to some tools, whether it's the email tool, whether it's GPT, whether it's, you know, whatever the tool is. So that would be my thoughts. Okay. In the last, let's call it minute or two, Jeremy, what would be your final takeaway for folks?
Well, we've talked a lot in other podcasts about NIST. Mm-hmm. And I think the NIST AI risk management framework would be a great thing to look at. There's working groups out there that I just has as well for artificial intelligence. First, go and educate yourself of what is out there, how to build a good framework, a good governance, good policies for that, so that you can go and connect with the people, like you said, to make sure data that needs to remain private, it's not getting put out in a public cloud. Make sure that you understand what all the different buzzwords are. It is easy and intuitive to understand how to use it. This is still cybersecurity. You still need to have a framework to follow. So I would say default to that.
Yep. That's great. He mentioned it. That we have a whole working group dedicated to that. They put out a lot of resources. Our working group, the cybersecurity working group, is actually working on a separate document kind of specifically focused on AI too. So you can look for that on IGIS's side. CISA has some great resources as well. Certainly NIST, as Jeremy mentioned. But like always, everybody, if you like this content, if you want to hit more, definitely subscribe. Definitely follow us on the different channels. I think we're YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We're kind of everywhere now. And provide feedback. That's something that we actually, Jeremy, you and I have not asked for. But I know we're kind of, again, on these platforms, and there is the ability to provide feedback. So please provide us feedback. We want to hear kind of how these are going and really what other topics you want to hear about. We have our cybersecurity working group. We meet once a month. We do talk about topics, but we're making assumptions that these are the topics you, the listener, wants to hear about. So if there's any other great ideas, we want to hear it and keep them coming. Okay. All right, Jeremy. Well, thanks everybody for your time today. And until next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Sounds of Safety podcast. Be sure to stay connected with the IGIS Institute on LinkedIn and X. And don't forget to subscribe on Apple Music, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to catch future episodes. From cybersecurity to artificial intelligence and deep dives into critical national data sharing initiatives, the Sounds of Safety podcast has you covered. Until next time.